Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd. Today we have with us Jim Northrup with Cabin Philosophy. Jim, great you could join us today.
Nice to be here.
Now, Jim, on your website, the first thing I actually noticed was the tag, the Cabin Philosopher. Now, does that allude to you having a specific type of philosophy in cabins, or is cabin philosophy a whole new part of philosophy which is yet to make it to these shores?
The whole idea behind cabin is generally people go up to the cabin, a retreat, something like that, to kind of get out of the city and all their problems and all their upsets and get out in nature and kind of be more calm, I guess you could say. You can sit on the deck of your cabin and contemplate life, I guess you could say. And I like to do that. I wrote a whole book one weekend, or no, it's a little more than a weekend, at the cabin, because there's nothing else to do. And you're in this serene environment, and your mind kind of is a little more free, to me, or at least mine is.
Right. Now, our audience has a mixture of professional listeners who have good jobs and a mix of people who have a sixth grade education. And we're not talking about the 12-year-olds who listen. We're actually talking about people with a sixth grade education. So can you give us a bite-sized definition of philosophy? Because I think a lot of people automatically think somebody who spends most of their time being existential.
Yeah, no, that's
and or actually a easy degree to get in college.
Right, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, can you kind of explain that even some of the simple type of thought processes people go through in relation to themselves does start touching on philosophy, and it's not this hoity-toity thing that people don't need to have an interest in because it's just not part of their life?
Yeah, and my philosophy about philosophy is not to get all out there, you know. It's to get down to real things. But you could say the definition of philosophy is, as a person goes through life, they come up with their attitudes of life, and they come up with concepts that they feel solves life, you know. In other words, he who dies with the most toys wins, or, you know, and this whole philosophy brings about a desire to get ahead and have a lot of things. That could be a philosophy.
Yeah, there are a lot of philosophers out there that, and of course, I'm thinking back way back to like the Greek philosophers, so to speak. So one of my favorite ones was Epictetus. Have you ever heard of this guy?
No.
Okay, so Epictetus had like a Stoicism version of philosophy. And it basically said, if this doesn't affect me, I don't care about it. So that was a way to look at life.
Right.
Like, if this doesn't affect me, why should I even care about it? So would that kind of apply to philosophy like you look at?
Yes, exactly. It's how you solve life, you know. Or you're here on earth. What are you doing here? And why are you here? And how do you solve what's coming up in life? Yeah, that would be a solution.
You know? Great. Now, obviously a lot of philosophers or people interested in philosophy have favorite philosophers, but I don't want to ask you that question. I want to ask you, what philosophers do you hate or dislike, and why?
Interestingly enough, I don't like philosophers that preach how you are simply a mechanical thing.
You mean like Nietzsche or something? As in
we're a chemotropic being, basically a little bit more expanded on that, but with no spiritual influence, that everything is about us and our environment, environment.
Take Darwin, take Pavlov, these people. You are simply a product of physics. What you're doing has nothing to do with you. It's what the environment has created. Anything that any philosopher that puts you at the effect of the world and says you can't cause it and you can't do what you want to do or believe what you want to believe, but these are the rules you have to follow.
Yeah, and I understand those kind of writings back hundreds, if not thousands of years ago, because the mind was modeled a lot by government and church, as opposed to now we have this third influence, obviously, of the internet, social media. And nowadays there's not really much of an excuse for the ignorance that you could have forgiven, you know, philosophers from a long time ago. So now I guess you could put a label on it, not necessarily atheist philosophers, but philosophers who won't even remotely entertain that there might be some other influence than, you know, other than what's empirical, what you can see, taste, touch, etc. And so they try and make very collective statements based upon their own experience of life, transfer that and say, hey, this is a common mantra, and then sell it as philosophy. But if you already have all the answers, or at least you claim to be, and won't give room for anything else, then how is that really philosophy?
Yeah, that's more like indoctrination or education or something like that. It's, this is the way things are. Listen to me because I'm an authority and I know what the way it is. And if you understand what I say, then you will be enlightened or you will understand life. You know, that's unless a person is a god, I just don't think they've got it all solved.
So what separates you out from, you know, the ancient philosophers? You know, you're a modern day philosopher, right? So explain to us what separates you out from the ancient philosophers or even the modern day philosophers. What separates you out?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, and it's actually in one of my books called Total Amnesia, and it's a philosophy not of science, but of using the scientific technique. In other words, if you look at science, it's everything material, and anything spiritual is discounted as fluff or non-scientific. But they have an excellent method of using logic and theorization and supposition and postulation. What if this were true? And then go about trying to prove it. That is what I would consider my philosophy. I am not everything is material, but I do agree that modern science has a great way of reasoning that makes sense and isn't just kind of out there throwing out ideas that aren't really provable. I think, honestly, that anything, and this is a quote from what's his name, electrician, not Edison, but Tesla. He said something along the lines that on the day science acknowledges the spirit, it will make more progress than it has made in the last 200 years. Okay, so he was saying you can explain things and you can actually look at things scientifically, but if you're philosophy, you can use it as a philosophy, not just a scientific method. So if we were to really investigate non-spirit, non-material things, I mean, why does a person not know? You know, why does a person get angry? Why do people hate people? Why on earth is this world full of boundaries and people that fight amongst each other and try and define borders and all this kind of stuff? All the humanities. I think you can take the humanities and you can take a scientific viewpoint about it.
So I find that kind of interesting. So the boundaries, right? I think Canada needs that boundary. Like, we have to have that divide from Canada to the United States because we don't want those Canadian philosophies coming down here in the United States. Well,
in that case, okay. In that case,
you know, especially if they have, if they're trying to come down here with cats. So I have a problem with Canada and I have a problem with cats. So if the Canadians are trying to train cats to invade the United States with their philosophy, that would wear me out.
You think he's actually joking, Jim, but...
No, I'm not joking.
Here in Texas, you'd figure his biggest concern would be the southern border, but no, he's worried about the Canadian border French Canadians bringing down cats.
Yes, I left out the French part, I'm truly worried about that.
But on that serious note, with boundaries, do you find that it's inexcusable almost for a philosopher to impose boundaries on themselves when they're not going to come under that judgment and consequence of government or the church, like in the olden days? There is no topic really which you can't truly talk about. And however extreme your viewpoint on that topic is, you are still allowed to go out and do it. So why do you think there are philosophers which close off something which is so important to such a huge population of the world before they even start talking?
Well, they want to be right. They want to win. I would call it arrogance. It's like, I know, we know, you folks, you Canadians don't know. And we're not Canadians.
No. Let's make sure that we make that 100% clear.
Yeah. Sorry, no, we couldn't let that one slide in a couple of seconds in case some people turned off. So.
Yeah,
the thing, it's winning the game, man. It's our philosophy is best, and therefore... use it amongst ourselves, but I am not interested in being proven wrong. I mean, humanity has a real problem with being right about things, you know, and they don't want to hear how wrong they are.
Right. You know? Now, do you think that, you know, old philosophy was supposed to make you think differently or rethink about things, whereas now do you think philosophy has become more populist, as in it's just there to be a confirmation bias for what people already think?
That's kind of true, I think. I mean, you look at the crazy arguments amongst, you know, politics nowadays. It's like we are not interested in anything but our party's philosophy. We're not interested in the other party's philosophy. And in fact, our entire emphasis is proving the others wrong. And if you don't agree with us, then we are offended that you're so stupid.
Right. So if we look back at philosophy historically, right, it wasn't really about proving you're wrong or you're right. It was actually looking at a way of thinking. So modern day philosophy, you as being the cabin philosopher, if you could sum that up and say, you know, here's how you look at philosophy, how would you describe that?
Well, for one thing, a lot of what I write is science fiction in that sense. And I really think it's a good idea for someone to sit back, disconnect from the insanities and whatever of the world around them, and say, what if? and kind of put something out. You know, it can be pretty crazy. You know, what if we're, you know, like the Matrix or something like that. But you just go, what if? And you make a story around it. Like the one story I wrote, I said, what if a mining company were able to confine the miners and brainwashing them into thinking the universe was solid? And wow, wouldn't that be interesting? And they would install some kind of religion on these people, and these people would think that if they give gold to the gods, if they offer the gold to the gods, then the gods will give them food, you know. And they think the universe is solid, and they believe that food only comes from gods, this kind of thing. And they're following the golden paths, which are gold veins, through the universe, because the universe is solid, to Nirvana. And it turns out, and my concept of this is, what if they were to step out of the mine and go, what the hell is this? If they were to somehow reach a adjoining cave and step out and look and go, I have no idea what this is.
Yeah.
I think, right. So honestly, almost like L. Ron Hubbard. I mean, L. Ron Hubbard was a science fiction writer, and he created a religion based off his philosophy with Scientology, right?
No.
No? Okay. Well, correct me then.
No, I only say that because I've studied it extensively.
Okay. Well, I was always under the assumption L. Ron Hubbard was a science fiction writer. He wrote a lot of books, and that was all based off of his religion he created, based off of his science fiction writings.
He was also a scientist, I guess you could say.
Okay.
And you could also say, you know, what I was saying before, if one takes the soul or the spirit and takes a scientific view of it and tries to solve it, then it's a good way to do it, you know? So, as far as science fiction goes, he was an incredible writer. He wrote science fiction. He wrote all kinds of different genres. And it was to finance his research. And he was researching the soul. I mean, that's what I know about
it. Yeah. No, and we're not going to get into that by any means. But you also said you're a science fiction writer. And mm-hmm. you're in philosophy, so I'm trying to pair those two together because, you know, a lot of philosophy goes into religion, and mm-hmm. he was a science fiction writer and everything. I don't think you're trying to create your own religion, right?
No, I think that's, no, definitely not.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure, because you haven't said, hey, donate to my church, you know, for this podcast. So we're good there. I just want to make sure.
We do want 15% off if you are.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If you are going to create your own religion, we want in.
We want officer positions.
Yes, absolutely.
We are in. We just want to let you know that up front.
Let me explain my philosophy of science fiction. Because they can go hand in hand. I mean, science fiction says, what if, right? And honestly, much of what we see as far as technological progress in this world comes from someone who said, what if, you know?
Right.
And then writes a story and puts it out there. Star Trek, I mean, that...
You had to bring up Star Trek. Really? Not Star Wars? Star Wars is so much better than Star Trek. You know that, right?
Well, I think he means by that, if you look at Star Trek, I mean, Star Trek introduced more, I guess, gadgets that people thought, I wonder in the future if we have that.
Exactly.
We have this, we have that. And also, there's a lot of almost kind of like very trippy type episodes in Star Trek, which kind of have mixed that kind of spirituality and science, that what if we're in a different universe, the rules back there no longer apply. And so that's why I brought up Star Trek and not the greater.
Yes, because Jim, let's be honest, you want a lightsaber, right?
Who doesn't
want a lightsaber? I mean, you would rather have a lightsaber than anything available in Star Trek.
I don't know, that holodeck. I could get.
That's a good point. Yeah. But I thought you were a Star Wars fan, and now you're bringing that up.
Give that up for the holodeck.
Holodeck.
Okay. The last you ever see of me.
That's a good point.
Dragged my dead body out about 2 weeks later.
That's a good point. Still want a lightsaber though.
So Jim, do you think the old philosophers and their attempt to enlightenment, you know, to the readers is very different to almost like the de-enlightenment period it seems we're in now, because people will spend 10 minutes on Facebook trying to find out what type of Disney princess they are, but they won't spend 30 seconds fact-checking something to see if it's BS. Do you think that all of this knowledge out there has given people this false sense of security or fake security blanket because they believe that, well, maybe this old mentality, if it's out there, it must be true. And if I needed to know something, somebody would tell me if it was so. And surely enough, people would be talking about it if it was this great revelation. And so people have maybe stopped thinking for themselves as much, because now you have a medium where everybody can do the thinking for you.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you got a question. Okay, Google, right? What is this? What is that? You know, and in my opinion, creates a public that is not educated, they're indoctrinated.
Right.
Now, the information they come upon is placed there. And generally the information that you get is kind of put there. You got to following the party, you know, you have to agree with what's going on. You know, and, you know, as you know, on Facebook, anything contrary to it gets edited out. You know?
Yeah. Now, have you found any pushback, you know, towards your books and the lines you take in there? Because you say, you know, obviously, whether it's fiction or science fiction, part of the author's personality and belief system still comes out in those books. Now, in today's age, have you ever kind of written anything in those books where sometimes you might think somebody might come back and misinterpret what you're saying or kind of hold you over the coals for what you were saying?
Yes, there's a liability there. If you put something out there and you know, you go on Facebook and you see the comments, if you don't say something really that's pretty agreeable to this Facebook group you're in, you're going to get trashed. I remember I said, I don't really believe in certain mental health practices. And I remember saying that, and that's the last time I ever said that, because I got really attacked. But none of the things I write are anything like that. Everything is, I'm not saying this is the way it is. I'm not trying to explain it to people.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, what if?
Yeah, we came pretty close to cancel culture when we said that gingers had no souls and I wanted to punch a chimpanzee in the face, but we rode that one out and, you know, kind of kept our noses
we dodged
clean
that
in
bullet.
For a couple of weeks. But no, we're lucky to have, you know, a platform where we can literally say anything, and at least for the foreseeable future, it's not going to affect us. Now, down the line, could it?
Yeah, maybe for the next week.
Yeah, but we always have this understanding, you know, anybody who's listened to the show, that literally anything we say might be complete crap, and it's not necessarily even our own opinion. We might just be saying that for a joke or to make a point about something. But you, as an author, kind of, you know, you're really at the mercy of somebody taking away what they believe you were saying, and you don't give the opportunity to counter that interpretation.
It's a one-way communication. It really is. And you know, yeah, you don't have a chance to defend yourself, especially if it's misinterpreted, which is generally the case.
How is it misinterpreted? And I'm curious, can you expound on that a little more? Like, can you give us an example of something philosophical that's been misinterpreted?
Good question. Here's one. You say something like, man is a spiritual being, right? And this gets misinterpreted. And I'm trying to think of a good example.
Star Wars is the greatest movie ever made.
Yeah, let's get a little easier than that. Yeah. I get too philosophic about this.
No, I'm trying to give you a delay here to kind of gather your thoughts.
I can kind of see where you were actually going with that, Jim, about the man as a spiritual being, because you find that people put too much emphasis sometimes when you ascribe spirituality to something, is that they put a lot of things out of their hands that they still have control over, or believe that, you know, destiny might be completely out of their hands, and so what they do is irrelevant. So I do think that statement, man is a spiritual being, can be misleading to some people who take that, you know, in a different direction than what it's actually trying to say, that there's duality, man is both flesh and spirit, and there's a responsibility as flesh and as spirit. So, I mean, I think what you were saying was probably going along the right lines, really.
Yeah, you could say that. I keep losing my train of thought as far as this goes, because quite honestly, one of my biggest assertions as a philosopher all begins with the fact that man is a spiritual being. He is not a body. He has one and he uses it. And it is very limiting to a person as a spiritual being. Now that'll get controversial.
Yeah. Well, that I don't see that as too controversial. Well, I mean, that's Judeo-Christian beliefs.
It's not too far distance from, say, something like Descartes, you know, Meditations on the First Principle. I mean, but I guess in today's day and age, sometimes that can be a very polarizing statement.
Right.
Whereas maybe 30 years ago, even, you'd have had more broader acceptance even the further left you went, because they still respected the right of religion to be able to exist. But now they see religion as almost being aggressive or counter progressiveness. Sure. So you do get attacked for simply stating that there might be a spiritual belief to your teachings.
Yeah. So shifting in a different direction, how important is philosophy now to be taught in higher education? Let's say, you know, college, right? So you can get a degree in philosophy, but you can also get a degree in something else and then take philosophy classes. So how is higher education dealing with philosophy now versus, like you said, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago? Has that shifted? You know, where are we at with philosophy?
You know, right now, it's not going to get you a good job.
Neither will podcasting. Let's just be clear.
A lot of it is quoting people of the past and knowing what other philosophers said, which is fine. If you want to do that, that might be something that might be interesting. But I really lean more towards the practical aspect of this. What will philosophy do for you in your life? Rather than, you know, I don't, it's almost like it's almost misleading to say, well, I'm a cabin philosopher. I go up in the cabin and contemplate things. And it has nothing to do with my life, and it's not going to make me a better person.
Yeah, but that's what we were talking about earlier, that, you know, people now have almost become lazy about thinking and existentialism because they have this, oh, if I've thought it, somebody else has thought it and come up with a solution. And so they will go online rather than doing their own type of introspection. And, you know, isn't there an importance in philosophy for people to be able to expand beyond what they daily, you know, see and hear? And without that being taught, that people, as you've mentioned a couple of times, become indoctrinated to this vessel that, you know, is holding in a lot more than you're capable of. And teaching, if that's the only influx of philosophy that person gets in their life, those college classes or, you know, high school classes or whatever, and that teaching is wrong or it's very limiting, where do we go from here to be able to get back to a period of enlightenment?
Well, I agree with that. I think philosophy should be a workable thing. And when I say this, I mean, people should be free to have their own ideas and find their own way and determine things that are real to them. If they're studying somebody who tells them this is the way it is, you have to immediately admit that you don't know. If you're using someone else to tell you the way life is or whatever, then you're in essence admitting you don't know. And you're also admitting that you want their idea to guide you. The philosophy that I'm interested in is giving the people the opportunity to question and look at things for themselves.
Yeah. Now, when I was a kid, I philosophized until people started telling me things, and then I started that process of just trusting other people's opinions who had more experience.
Right.
Now, because everything is kind of spoon-fed to you nowadays, there isn't much room for expansion of the mind unless you deliberately seek it. There's not very many of these accidental eureka moments where you're sitting in the bathtub contemplating this problem for 30 minutes and then you come up with a solution, because again, you're trusting other people to do it. So if that disappears, where was spirituality go with that?
Sure, but you also have the problem that we all have phones.
Right.
Right. And then somebody says, hey, this is what this is. And somebody brings their phone up and says, oh, well, let me Google this really quick, and just discountenance all your ideas because somebody wrote an article about this on the internet. And then they say, well, it's written down on the internet, so it's got to be true. So, I mean, if it's in writing on the internet, it's true, right?
Right.
I mean, we have a friend, let's be honest, that everything that's written down on the internet, he believes it's true, right?
Yeah.
So then you take that philosophical part out of it where, like, you're trying to point out, Jim, that, hey, let's think about these things, right? Rather than just believing something that's written, let's actually think about this and say, could this be true? Is this real?
Let me give you an example. I used to teach people, and they would be reading texts about, you know, something. The way to do this is you do this. And what I encountered almost uniformly was, I would say, okay, this says blah-de-blah. So explain to me what that says. And they would just regurgitate it. You know, that's kind of learning today. And I would say, okay, so what does that mean, though, to you? And they would look at me with a questioning look on their face and go, and repeat it back. So this is a loss of an ability to have judgment in what you're learning.
Yeah, but wouldn't that go back to one of my favorite movies, Good Will Hunting? There's a scene in Good Will Hunting when he's in a bar And there's a guy there from Harvard, and he quotes some deal from some political book or whatever. And Matt Damon's character kind of runs up to him and says, "Oh, you're quoting this and blah, blah, blah." And for $150,000, of course, let's be honest, this movie was like 30 years ago. So I'm sure a Harvard education costs like $500,000 now. But back there, he said, "Oh, so you're going to spend $150,000 on this education to regurgitate stuff that you could have learned for $1.50 in overdue fines at the public library." Mm-hmm. So we're not teaching kids, even back right. then and even today, how to think. We're right. just saying, here's the facts, or they're not even facts. Here's what's written down somewhere. Regurgitate these on an exam. So I give you a grade. So I hand you a piece of paper that you can put in a fancy frame that my parents paid, by the way, $249 for my frame for my college degree. So you can hang it on the wall and say, "Hey, you have a college education. You're an educated person." I think that's what you're basically trying to say.
An indoctrinated person.
Yeah.
It's like 2 + 2 = 4. How much is 2 + 2? 4. Okay, you pass. They don't even know what you're talking about, but they know if they say what the authority, the teacher, said, then they will be right. And they forget to think for themselves. And if they do think for themselves, they fail the class. You know, yeah. God, look at all the great philosophers or the great scientists. They uniformly dropped out of school.
Yeah, and I think with science, it goes through a period of extreme arrogance where it believes it has the answers for everything. I think it was either at the end of the 19th century or beginning of the 20th, there was that statement made that everything that can be invented has been invented. And now you have science where they truly believe they can explain everything, even if it means not dismissing it. So if you talk about spirituality, now they try and come out with a very concise scientific explanation for why somebody might have a life after death experience or any type of supernatural type experience. They've almost like reverse engineered a scenario to come up with something slightly plausible and slightly supported by science to make those people who are curious-minded, "Oh, no, there's definitely nothing spiritual involved. This can all be explained by science. We've just got a few little gaps to fill in before, you know, total knowledge is there."
Yeah, to be controversial, my opinion, science today is arrogant beyond belief. It's like we know what we know, and contrasting opinions are not allowed.
Right.
Well, and I'm going to give you a fine example. By the way, Jim, I took my father to the doctor today, mm-hmm. right? And so he had a CT scan, and the doctor is showing us the CT scan and flipping through this and saying, "Well, here's what I see." And my dad is looking at me saying, "Well, what do you see?" And I looked at my dad and I said, "I don't know. I'm not a doctor."
A giraffe?
No, I think it was a tortoise, actually, because that's actually what I saw was what looked like a tortoise. But we're beholding to the scientists, right? So when you have science saying, "Well, here's what's going on," right? And you don't agree with us, you don't know what we know, it's almost this sacred knowledge, so to speak, right? Like we're holding on to this knowledge. And I look at doctors right now and I say, "Well, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know what y'all know. I've got to trust you. I've got to say,
doctor.
I've got to trust you, and I've got to say, okay, you have my best interests in mind. You're definitely not just trying to profit from me off the insurance company and collect a check, right?"
Oh, never.
I mean, you want me to be healed. So I look at that and I say, "Well, okay, but you got to believe this guy. I mean, he went to school. He went through, you know, college education, got an undergraduate degree, then went on to medical school, got an MD. Now he's a surgeon. Now he can read this. I got to believe him.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the funniest things which has come out of this COVID thing is this.
Oh, my God. Don't go down this rabbit hole.
Well, no, I mean, from saying
trust. I thought this was about philosophy, not about COVID.
And the point about trust the science is, yes, I trust the science. What I don't trust is your interpretation of the science or the data you have available on that science. Because when you flip-flop, it wasn't the science that changed. So you're saying trust the science. I do trust the science. I don't trust your interpretation of it here or here, because each time you've changed your mind as more information has become available and you still don't see the irresponsibility of sending out a worldwide message at a point where admittedly you have little data, then you change your mind again, which should have been a kind of, oh my bad, this won't happen again. But then you do it again, and then people who aren't listening to these scientists are being accused of not believing science, when the fact is we do trust the science. It's just we're not down with the people who are interpreting the science.
Exactly. And that's the problem. Science is what it is. The universe is what it is. It acts the way it acts. You know, what is going on with somebody's body is what it is. There isn't any question about that, but there is quite a question about somebody's interpretation of it. And a lot of it depends on whatever fixed idea or agenda they kind of lean towards, you know, and things get influenced that way.
Yeah. And that makes sense. So how do we apply philosophy to get people to think better? I mean, that's what philosophy is supposed to be, is the science of teaching people how to think. That's what's fascinating about philosophy. You have philosophers and all that. You yourself are a philosopher, which is fantastic. Tristan is actually a philosopher. He's a philosopher on wearing clothes the same all week. I'm a philosopher on beer. And that's basically it, as far as we go. But you're a philosopher on multiple topics. So explain to our listeners the importance of philosophy.
Well, philosophy is seeking truth, right? I mean, I think that's a good way to use it. And it requires you to have a mind that allows you to think beyond the limits that are put out there. I mean, yeah, right now, like I was given an example before, you have schools simply indoctrinating kids. They're not, and they're saying, here's the data, we know, give us an answer. They're not requiring you to think freely and say, well, why don't you question this? That's where philosophy should come in.
Yeah. And I think, sorry.
Go ahead.
I think that there used to be a line between what was binary, true and false, as opposed to what was simply an opinion, which probably had more validation behind it, given the circumstances. But now I think kids are being taught that certain opinions are true and a fact, as opposed to any room for debate or thinking differently. And opinion is now being presented as fact and almost presented as a scientific fact, at least
exactly.
in realms of, you know, anthropology, that, you know, a decent society would think this way and would come to this conclusion and would have these goals as their aims. And so kids are getting indoctrinated under the cloak of science, when in reality, it's just opinion.
Exactly. And you know, I don't want to give you the controversial opinion teaching that it goes on in school right now, but there's a whole lot of suggestions, you know, not backed by science, but just giving kids opinions. And if the kid doesn't have the opinion the teacher gives him, then there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were going to teach a college class on philosophy,
ooh,
what would your class be called and what would your primary focus be?
Really interesting. I've never even thought of that before, but I would probably call it scientific philosophy.
Oh, no, and you got to call it cabin philosophy. I mean, you're the cabin philosopher. I threw a softball at you. Now, come on.
Well, I don't think it would go in. Well, maybe it would in school. Maybe that would be something everybody's going, hey, a cabin
philosophy. Hey, we're here to help you. And when you get your check from the university, we'll take 20%. Yeah. I think that's fair. Mm. And we'll be good with that.
Because I've already come up for a definition of what cabin philosophy is, because he calls himself the cabin philosopher, right?
Right.
But cabin philosophy, if you think about a cabin, it's normally quite a small enclosed space, right?
Right.
But it's surrounded by a whole world of new things to see. And so the philosophy is based upon you being trapped in this artificial prison of a small cabin. Whereas as soon as you look out the window and look outside this cabin, in every single direction, there's a whole wonderful new world out there.
So
that's cabin philosophy.
Oh, wow. No, you need to calm down on the Delta 8 because I think that's where that's coming from.
Yeah, sorry.
Same question applies.
I'm not getting that. No, and what I would teach is free thinking, right? The ability to think for yourself and base it on, I mean, how do you think? What is opinion something you should use? Is doing what, thinking what other people tell you, is that correct? My whole curriculum would be, all right, make an assertion. Okay, let's look at it. Where have you seen it? Give me examples of it. And the whole purpose of it is to get a person able to think again, to think for themselves, and not just to do whatever they're told to do, regurgitate what they're told to regurgitate. Well, I think it'll get them a degree.
Well, I think also the danger in today's system is that any type of thinking which is adjacent or opposite also to what they're being presented of is not only highlighted as being wrong, but also as being dangerous, as in associating you with a lot of negative traits like, oh, only racist people think that way, you know, only psychopaths think that way. And so people almost put a breaker on themselves thinking outside of this line they're being given, because they're being brainwashed right from the start that thinking any differently to this and you suddenly become part of the problem.
Yes. The thing I think of is using a generality, you know, like you're a racist, you are a whatever, and not, if you do this, you are a racist, sticking a generality on something that isn't true. So in other words, if you are white and wear a Trump hat, you are a white supremacist, boom, okay? I don't know. I know a lot of people that aren't, that may wear something like that, but it's using these button phrases to sway a person's thinking.
Yeah, you know? I always compare that to, you know, when you go to the grocery store and you buy a t-shirt and it says one size fits all. Now, one size fits all should mean that it fits the majority of people, but one size fits all, it really fits a very minimum number of people, because it's always too long, too tight, too short, the neck's wrong. And so one size fits all actually displeases far more people than it actually pleases.
No, that's true, but part of your problem is you buy your clothes from a grocery store.
Well, I'm just giving an example, because the last time I saw one size fits all, I got banned from Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, but you need to stop buying your clothes from grocery stores. You know, we have the same clothes we've worn for years, other than our, you know, podcast swag that we've actually bought. I think this is the newest t-shirt I've had in 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
And you as well.
Well, other than what my girlfriend's bought for me or I've just been given as gifts, I mean, I can't remember the last t-shirt I bought myself.
Right.
Years.
It has been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same with me.
Yeah. But Jim, as we were saying, these blanket statements which get thrown out about things really apply to very few people's lives, because otherwise, when philosophical writings, you know, were written down and people could read them, there'd be no reason for anybody else to think any further if these statements encompassed everything. Whereas I think philosophy is really something there to act as a catalyst or a springboard for you to, you know, famously quote another thing, know thyself, you know, for somebody to use philosophy to know who they really are and their place in the universe. And so that's why blanket statements about philosophy will never work, because that person's got to find their own path to be completely happy.
Exactly. And that's the whole idea behind, you know, if a person's educated, they are indoctrinated into a certain way of thinking. And yeah, that thinking is common. It has to be common for everybody. But they are never allowed to think freely and question things and come up with conclusions on their self, because, you know, honestly, you won't pass the test.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So tell us a little bit about your books. You've got a number of books under your belt, right? And so let's walk through some of your books that you've written, you know, about philosophy and all that good stuff.
Okay. Well, this will be a little different than you thought, probably. I'm kind of looking over. I had a big long thing I want to do to explain my books.
But, go through that. You know, explain your books. That's why you're here.
Okay. As long as we have time.
Yeah, we have time.
Okay. So I can introduce the first one. And I kind of touched on this earlier. And that was Miners Trapped Under the Surface of the Earth. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I begin my synopsis of this by saying, do you remember the Heaven's Gate cult?
Yeah, that was what was the comment? I think it was Hale-Bopp. Yeah.
Hale-Bopp.
No, I remember my father dragging me out in the front yard and saying, look at this comet. I remember Halley's comet coming around, and it was just this little tiny speck in the sky, right? But that Hale-Bopp comet was big.
Yeah.
And my dad dragged me out in the front yard, and he said, you know, we don't know when this is coming back. You need to come out here and look at this. And it was big. But when the comet was coming around, nobody really knew about the Heaven's Gate thing until the comet kind of passed on, and then all those people, you know, decided to put on Nikes and kill themselves, which is, by the way, why we wear Adidas. You know, and you'll see the wolf has an Adidas hat on, and we're still waiting for Adidas to sponsor us, because, yeah, we're not going to wear Nike because we don't, you know, succumb to any cults or anything. That's what Nike's for. But anyway, go ahead and explain.
So this is just a kind of a lead up, but so they committed suicide to rendezvous with a spaceship on the Hale-Bopp comet and get to a higher level of existence, right? It's an absurd example, but I'll make this statement. What if they had told the truth?
No, I mean, I totally get that. I mean, you're never going to know. You could rewind 2,000 years And then you have everyone who followed Jesus Christ, and they probably looked at his disciples and everything and like, well, what if they were right?
Yeah, exactly. So, but say one of the members stayed behind and got confirmation that they were indeed on a higher level of existence and got out on a megaphone on the street and gave us a society the opportunity to receive this truth and rise to a higher level of existence. What would we have done with it? Of course, we would have declared him crazy, possibly a murderer, maybe taking him to the state hospital and loaded him up with enough Thorazine to make him sane again, you know?
Well, it would probably also depend on how many followers they had on Instagram.
Yeah, and that's okay.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the more followers you have on social media, the more your story makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, the whole thing with influencers or people have, you know, a lot of followers, they feel they're able to give their opinion on almost literally anything. And because they have a lot of followers, then they must know what they're talking about. You know, just like with a lot of athletes getting involved in the world of politics, and same thing with actors, actresses, etc. Because, you know, they feel they have this platform. And so all of a sudden their opinion is more relevant, relative to the people out there. But in terms of relativity and truth, you know, which is obviously a very big philosophical concept, that, you know, one person's truth is not another person's truth. But again, we are being taught in today's society that society's truth is the truth you're going to accept, or there's going to be consequences.
Whether you like it or not.
But with that being said, you know, if my truth is different to somebody else's, does it really mean that one of them has to be wrong if it works for us? Because it's not a binary truth. You know, is that tree a specific color? And even if it was a specific color, but somebody saw it as a different color, what's the problem with that being their truth? Why does something have to be so absolute all the time for it to be, you know, I guess kind of accepted?
Yeah, and my point is, what if someone actually had, and you look throughout history, a lot of great inventions have been introduced into society, and because they did not agree with the current philosophy or scientific community, they were looked upon as crazy, right?
No, that makes total sense.
So how do you determine if something is true or not, right? How do you determine if somebody's
so you have like math, right? And you can, and let's not get existential, right? But you can prove 1 + 1 = 2 in math, right? Beyond that, there's a lot of, you know, theorems and everything else that you can say, well, there's this theory that this works and blah, 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 blah. But outside of, you know, true logic and true math, there's nothing you can really prove that is true unless you had an eye and ear witness to. I mean, we can prove that the three of us are doing a podcast right now, but this could all be fake. And we're the only three that could say that this really happened. But maybe we recorded this and you recorded your deal and this podcast never happened. So that could really screw with people with their minds of, did this really happen?
Well, that goes more along the Schrodinger's cat thing, that unless you have evidence of one state or another, it could really be.
Yeah, but the problem with Schrodinger's cat, which, you know, the Big Bang Theory made famous, right? The cat is neither alive nor dead until you open the box. No, that's actually not true, because the cat is either alive or dead. Oh, it doesn't matter if you open the box. The cat is still in there, and the cat's either alive or dead.
Oh, yeah, but it's about, as in to the observer, because that's when you start going into theoretical physics that it actually influences physics depending upon your perception of it.
Right.
Okay. So that's a good point, because
isn't that philosophy, though, is the perception.
Yes, right? And that is about what the example of Heaven's Gate is kind of gets real philosophical. So let's look at this in a more realistic way. Okay. So what would we be able to see their truth, right? If it was actually true what they were saying? Well, no, our vision would never go beyond our own pet philosophies and scientific laws and religious doctrines and economic principles. You wouldn't get beyond it. We can't see that their idea any more than we could see the sky from inside a mine 2,000 feet under the surface. And that's what the story is about. The gold slaves. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, have you kept the same philosophical outlook from book one to your last book, or have things evolved in your thinking? And so now it's not that you'd be embarrassed of your earlier books because they maybe were kind of restrictive thinking as to where you are now, but do you think your philosophy has changed through your books as you've got to now?
Not much. This is actually one of my earliest books. I probably wrote this in 85 or something like that. It was a long time ago. And it's pretty much been on the same theme. So let me kind of explain what this happens in this book and how it aligns with philosophy. Okay. So you have the gold slaves that live under the earth, and they believe the universe is solid, and they believe they donate or offer gold to gods, and in return they receive food. And they were actually brainwashed 100 years ago into believing this. And at some point the minds were disconnected, and now they don't even know there's such a thing as an earth. They think the universe is solid. Okay. Now, from the surface, we can easily see they're just simply duped slaves, right? That's we can tell that from where we sit. And we can laugh and say these people have just fallen for a fairy tale. Gold offered to gods, food comes from gods, universe is solid. How silly and ignorant can these people be? Okay, that is our viewpoint. The people in the know on the surface.
So is that kind of similar to then like the allegory of the cave in terms of people who have always been brought up to believe the symbolism means something which is really an illusion, but as long as that concentration, if you've always been taught from an early age, it doesn't have to be that elaborate or convincing for that association for it to be with something. I think, you know, one of the biggest restrictions draconian governments put on people is their inability to be able to expand their mind and find information and, you know, not really philosophize that life could be different, or life for me specifically could be different. So, you know, do you think that there's always going to be those constrictions? Like people say with your books, a lot of science fiction based, do you think people who aren't necessarily science fiction fans as such can really get as much out of the philosophical teachings you're putting in as if you put that into a different scenario?
Well, I put it into a different scenario. That's that in order to try and communicate my concept. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yeah, I mean, like, is the message you're trying to communicate, would you only be able to do that within the freedom of science fiction setting, because you can really go anywhere with it? Would you be able to apply that in a different type of genre, get your message across? Or do you think that freedom in sci-fi allows you, restrictions, I guess.
It does, because now you can say, I'm not trying to push this on you. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying, here's a concept. And I kind of think it's a cool concept and it might make sense to you. And, you know, if it's science fiction, you don't have to, I'm not an authority. I don't have to be the authority and you don't have to agree with me. And my, what I am attempting to do is make something interesting, a philosophic concept.
Right. And I think that's basically the point of philosophy. We have to make things interesting.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're going to get somebody interested in listening and learning, you got to make it interesting.
Right.
And that's existed for what, thousands of years, you know, with the ancient philosophers, with any kind of university, anything else, you got to make it interesting. And especially today where people just want to watch a 2-minute YouTube video to learn something or something like that. We have short attention spans, right? We got to make things interesting because there's so much entertainment out there that people say, well, I've only got this amount of time, so I'm going to focus this amount of time on whatever this is. And you don't have the ability to give this long diatribe of information going out.
Well, I think once you take away context and culture away from almost anything, it can be misinterpreted or judged without knowing the circumstances. You know, things become very sterilized and it's easy to judge very sterile things because you can't relate to them. Like you talk about something like a crime of passion, you know, if you found somebody beating up one of your kids, you know, you'd probably murder the person type thing. And it's a crime of passion, but you take away the context of that act happening and you take that you just beat somebody to death, then that's going to be judged without that back information as something very different than what it was.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So as we close, walk us through your books that are available and your website and all that stuff, because you've got a lot of content out there that we want everybody to know about your content and everything. So walk us through all that content.
Okay. Well, I have a bunch of short stories that you can download if you want, and they're just personal life experiences that are very interesting. But the three main books I have are The Gold Slaves, which I've just barely touched upon. I mean, this, what I've described to you is not the story. It's a setup for what happens. So that is, I guess you could say, looking at the world very differently. And these people were just, their viewpoint was restricted, and they were amazingly intelligent people. Their culture was far superior to ours, so they weren't stupid. The only thing that they didn't have was the proper viewpoint, because they just weren't up standing on the surface of the earth 2,000 feet above. They were restricted in a viewpoint, and a lot of people get restricted from a certain point of view. And when these slaves stepped out of the mine, they went, what the heck is this? And they realized the people on the surface are just as restricted in their viewpoint. And that leads up to the next book I wrote, which is called Total Amnesia. And this has to do with the fact that we have been around, I mean, if you look at it the way I look at it, how did we get here? Where did we come from? Well, we were there when we got here, and we were there when we came from something. Why don't we know? Why wouldn't we know? Well, the thing that is occurring, and possibly you have been around for millions of years, and you have no concept that has ever happened. What you have is called total amnesia. You've forgotten. And there's a reason you've forgotten. In this universe, you control a free spirit by making him forget. Now he he only knows Earth or something like that. He doesn't know where he's been. He doesn't know what he's done. He doesn't know what's got him here. And in this book, it totally it's a first person story, and it has me discover where I came from. And how did I do that? I had a person who was a free spirit who was able to show me how I got put in the situation I am. It goes over things, I see you smiling, goes over things like spirit traps, how you trap a spirit, mind fabricators, how you can create a mind around a person and control his thinking, and body injectors, things that take a free spirit and inject it into a body and configure it to a brain, just like downloading software. And from that point on, he believes he is a body. And all his, in his viewpoint, is totally from that point of view. He no longer knows that he, as a spirit, can go anywhere, do anything. Now he has to carry a body around with him. He has to keep it alive. He can't get another one, or he doesn't know if he can. It becomes a very strange, interesting philosophic discussion. So that's another book. And my final one is a satire. It's called Brainography, which is what it does. It solves the human brain in terms of a computer, and it compares it to a computer, right? And that's pretty much what the scientists say. Your brain has neurons, and they are hardwired a certain way by impulses coming from the environment. And so you think the way you think because the environment, the brain acts the way it acts, okay? And this is a satirical way of looking at things, because it really ends up you becoming simply a robot, a slave to physics, because everything in your life, every thought you have, the reason you're sitting there listening to me is because at some point, billions of years ago, life was formed, and Darwin explains how our brains were constructed by the environment, and then the cells formed, and here you are. And you have just followed the laws of physics. There's no you. There's no self-determinism. You are following the laws of physics, and it's a satire.
Yeah, do you see the irony in that possibly the marker of mankind's greatest achievement in technology will be that it can successfully replicate the most basic human life form and be convincing?
Well, I believe it can do that, but it will never replicate the awareness of the person. I believe, and my thesis is that a person, the awareness, judgment, reasoning ability, decision comes only from a spirit. And the computation only comes from a brain. So you can make the most complicated brain in the universe and make it look perfect, you know, like Data or whatever like that. But you cannot replicate a spirit, and you will never make an alive being there.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how can everybody get a hold of you and find these books?
Okay, so my website, J.W. Northrup, Northrup.com. And there you can find all the books. They're also available on Amazon. Just do a search on J.W. Northrup, particularly J.W. Northrup Brainography, J.W. Northrup Total Amnesia, and J.W. Northrup The Gold Slaves. And you can find it there, or just go to the webpage and it'll link you there. I'm also on Facebook, J.W. Northrup, big surprise, and on Instagram, J.W. Northrup. And on, finally, LinkedIn, same name.
right. Very good. Well, Jim, we certainly appreciate you joining us on the podcast. Everybody go check out his books, check out his website. All that information is going to be on our website as well. So, if you didn't catch that, you're in the car or whatever, you can't write it down, you can jump on our website and we'll have the links to that as well. So, hey, Jim,
thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. And that will do it for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. And we will catch you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.